So, Eric, what are we going to talk about this week?
Well,
shaking Joby Hall's hand, huh?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it was exciting. It was very exciting. So, yeah, we were in, we'd gone over to shop from Bardstown over to Lexington yesterday. And so we go into a Cheddar's restaurant. Have you ever eaten in a Cheddar's?
I don't know what a Cheddar's is, I guess.
Cheddar's is like, it's similar to like any kind of, it's kind of similar to a Rafferty's or an O'Charley's. Or,
okay.
Yeah, you know, that's sort of like, it's a chain, I don't know, whatever. But it's not fast food, but it's whatever. I don't know. Anyway, it's that kind of place.
Right.
And so they sat us in there, and it was big Memorial Day. A lot of people out taking advantage of the shopping or having gone to Gray's on Monday morning. And so they went back and sat us, and he was with a group of fellas at a big long table sitting back by us. And after we had our lunch, he was still at his table and he wasn't engaged in conversation. And so I went over and shook his hand.
That's nice.
It was really nice. I told him, I said, I wasn't going to interrupt him if he was actually talking, but the conversation was kind of at the other end of the table and he was sort of sitting at the end, and some of them had left and that sort of thing. He was just kind of sitting at the end, and, you know, I mean, he's Joby Hall and he's in Lexington, and, you know,
sure,
obviously he knows we're all in from the sticks on Memorial Day, you know, from on Kentucky. And I think he was even wearing a UK sweater. So he, you know, it wasn't like he was trying to go incognito. So I just shook his hand and I said, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I just want to, you know, thank you and say how much happiness you've brought to a lot of people, including us. We've been talking about him. And it was great. Like, almost like immediate. First of all, it's pretty remarkable. You know, he's like, gosh, he's got to be almost 90 years old. I think he's my mom's age.
Sure.
She's 89 this summer. And he, you know, he probably gets that so often. He immediately said in response, he immediately said, well, nobody enjoyed it more than I did. And, you know, which is just such a classic, you know, it's exactly what you would expect him to say. And
wish he had just big timed you or had some guy come over and rough you up.
Yeah, that's right. He just waves his finger over and has somebody take me away.
That's good. I mean, that's what we all expect from Joby, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. And he's like sitting out, you know, you know, he's sitting out with a bunch of guys, and we were all, you know, who knows who these guys are that could be, you know, we all, we were all joking about how rich they all probably were and, you know, different things. Of course, we have no idea who they were. And, but he's, you know, it's exactly the kind of guys that you would expect to see him, you know, these gray haired guys, some in suits, some in, you know, whatever. But anyway, they're all sitting around this table and telling stories and laughing it up and, you know, being gentlemen out on Memorial Day.
Sure.
Kentucky gentlemen. Very, very, very stereotypical scene. But, you know, eating their sirloins. And she was pretty cute. We, of course, the whole time we were joking about, like, this one aunt who was with us. She's a good bit younger, but she's, I don't know, 70 or something. But anyway, we were joking about that she would try to pick up Joby at the so that was what we were having fun with. We were all whispering back and forth and passing notes and all
sure.
that stuff.
That's funny. He's a big celebrity.
He's a huge celebrity.
I mean,
yeah. Did you ever see him when you were at UK? Was he around at all?
No.
Not involved.
No, he was, yeah, he was, you know, I think Joby, I think his popularity came back a bit when Denny retired,
yeah,
and when Patino left, obviously.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think UK fans generally got less like angry. You know, once Patino won a couple championships, there.
Well, after Eddie Sutton, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know,
yeah,
everything was kind of
heat of things. So, yeah.
It was ugly times.
You know, I mean, I've even just in the little bit of sports writing that I did, I mean, I met a handful of people, but I'd certainly never met him. And so for me, that was very much just a celebrity moment. You know, I was nervous and all that kind of stuff. And it was, my heart was kind of skipping a little bit as I went up to shake his hand and that sort of thing. But it, so it made it fun.
Sure.
You know,
I could see that.
Yeah. Joby Hall. He's a big man. Of course he is. He's a college basketball
player. Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
He's a big man. And he was sitting down, so I don't know. But he looked, you know, 6'4", 6'6".
I always liked your story about the one, you know, when you got to meet Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
How struck you were by not just the size of the man, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. But the size of his hand. I remember you commenting. Yeah. On the idea that big punch by this giant hand, by this giant yeah. man is like.
Yeah. And he was long retired by that point. He, you know, he really did. His Parkinson's hadn't set in any too much at that point. And he was doing magic tricks when he made this appearance in Bowling Green for this like NAACP event in Bowling Green. And he did this like levitation trick. Where you know,
I've heard about the levitation trick from somebody else. Yeah.
Yeah. To me, it was magic. I have no idea how that guy did that thing. I mean, he levitated. I saw that guy levitate. It was weird. And like everybody in the room, you know, if they didn't, at least the people who weren't traveling with him and who had seen it 30 times, I mean, we were all like, well, that's strange. I mean, he's actually levitating. I have no clue how that guy did that thing. Magic is so weird.
Yeah.
Those people are amazing.
Maybe he just really levitated.
Yeah, he might have. I don't know what the deal was. But yeah. So anyway, yeah, it was a big day. It was such a Lexington day, you know, to drive up and go shopping and to go to all the, you know, Toys R Us and Barnes & Noble. You know, stuff like that.
Hit the Trader Joe's while you're there.
Yeah, Trader Joe's. We went to Trader Joe's before we went home. I don't know. You know, various home goods type stuff. But to go out and do that you know, New Circle Road shopping experience and sit in the traffic and all that.
Sure.
My driving was horrible yesterday. I nearly caused two huge wrecks. But
did you go by the old farm?
Yeah, you know, I don't know where your farm was.
Right across from the airport.
Well, we were right there.
Yeah, on 60. So, yeah right next to, I mean, it's now part of Keeneland.
So. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, absolutely. We definitely drove right by it.
Yeah.
The thing I remember from squash, I remember that you ate squash raw.
Well, squash is good raw.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. But I remember you talking about like that, like when it was so hot out on the farm, you would eat squash raw. It would really cool you down.
You know, a really good dish actually is, have you ever done the thing where you get zucchini and you put it through a spiralizer and it makes like, a spiralizer kind of cuts the vegetable, you know, super thin. It almost turns it into like spaghetti strips.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
And then you toss it with pesto and fresh tomatoes. It's really good. In the summer, it's a great summer dish. Yeah, don't know how we got off on that, but.
This podcast episode is riveting.
Well, I'm tired today. That's my excuse. You know, Keeneland, that's the one place I'd like to go back to in Lexington. Yeah. I'd really like to go back and see a race. Spend a day. You never went?
Nah.
It's funny all that time I lived out there, but you didn't come up to see me that often, so.
That's not true.
You hardly ever came up there.
We just weren't going to Keeneland.
No, I know.
We were both broke.
Yeah, Keeneland's a good place when you're a college student to go to cheap, at least back then. I don't know what it's like now.
Yeah.
But you could go there pretty cheap back in those days. Because it was only like $2 to get in. And I think a dollar for the, you know, for the racing form. And then, you know, so $3 to get in, essentially.
Right.
And if you didn't eat or drink anything.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, it is pretty cheap.
But
no, I don't know. We never did that. Isn't it? They have like fairly limited when they run, right? I mean, it's.
They have a spring and a fall.
A spring and a fall.
Yeah.
It's really, it's that whole, that area is not just terribly changed. Oh, wait a second. You know what? Can you pause this for a second?
Sure.
Virginia's got a friend over playing and that was her mom calling. So I had to take that too. So,
yeah. Oh, that's right. You guys are out.
Yeah. Yeah. We're out of school. We've been out of school for like 2 weeks.
Yeah. Of course you guys started like super early compared to us too, so
yeah, they've gone to these like really early starts and scheduling a really early finish, and then it allows for snow days because we take snow days for anything because we've all gone to these consolidated districts, and so like the most out, you know, you shut down the whole system,
sure,
because we're busing from such far distances and that sort of thing, and it's really remote areas that never get cleared. So but then this year we got no snow basically. So, we had no snow days to have to make up. And, so anyway, yeah, they were sprung basically at the middle of May. Anyway, I forget what their last day was. I think it was the 16th.
Wow. That's early.
Yeah.
That's really early.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeez. So yeah, exactly. But then I think the scheduled first day, is first week of August.
Yeah, I remember last year they started like August 3rd or something. Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah, I don't think they start back here till the 28th or maybe even the 4th of September. Mm-hmm. Or you know, the 5th. I can't remember if they start the week before. I think they start the week before Labor Day here. But
I get, you know, I have to say, I mean, I don't know which I don't know that I think there's really anything wrong with the schedule. It's fine with me. I mean, I guess, you know, you can imagine, I mean, our work setup is so convenient anyway. So from our standpoint, we just kind of need to know, but we can accommodate whatever. But I guess I can imagine where it's a problem for some people, but whatever.
Well, they had a big fight. You remember North Carolina when we were living there, there was a big fight over the start dates. And the argument in North Carolina at the time was the effect it had on tourism. Specifically the beach areas, because so many people in North Carolina actually go to the beaches in the summer.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think when Margaret first started teaching, they were starting back usually that second week in August. And, you know, the argument was we're losing like 3 weeks of people.
Yeah,
you know.
Revenue, yeah.
So.
Well, there's some stuff. You know, there's some stuff that gets talked about around that. But whatever. I don't know. This is how they're doing it for now. I'm sure they'll change it, you know.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. But I don't know what they're supposed to do. I mean, we're, you know, like in Hopkins County, I mean, some of the places where they have to run the buses. And by the way, like no kids ride the bus anymore. You know, the buses are almost empty. And, but the ones who need it.
Right.
And some of the places they go to, I mean, if you get 4 inches of snow, that the 4 inches of snow has to melt off. I mean, they're never going to get, you know, it's not like anybody's going to come out there and clear them.
Right.
So if that kid can't get to school, they're shutting it down.
Yeah. I wondered about the school bus thing too, because not that many kids ride.
Yeah. I suspect. I'll bet that will be, I'll bet that will be like one of the early applications of like commercial type Uber, you know, like sort of mass transit type Uber model type stuff, you know, like where there'll be, my guess is the math's getting close to where it's cost effective for the state to go to like some kind of like basically cat, you know, taxi situation for kids who require the public transit, or we'll go to, I mean, maybe that'll end up being autonomous, you know?
Well, one of the things they've done, they do in Moscow, which is one of the reasons why we don't ride the bus, to be honest with you, is that, you know, they pick up the, in the afternoon, at least they pick up the elementary school kids. And then they go from there over to the middle school and pick up the middle school kids.
Putting both on them.
Yeah. And so, like, the first time Mabel rode the bus, she was in kindergarten. She ended up sitting next to an eighth grader.
Yeah.
And we're like, yeah, that's not going to happen.
We're not going to do that. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, it took 45 minutes.
Yes, exactly. That's the thing. I mean, Virginia doesn't have any interest in riding the bus, and I don't blame her. The bus comes by here like when she's waking up, you know? And it's not inconvenient for us to drive her to school. It's really not. I mean, we live quite close, and she would, I mean, it would tack an hour and a half commute onto her day every day to you know, which is ridiculous, you know. Nobody wants that. So
that's true. Well, is there anything going on in the world? Anything happening in Kentucky?
That's part of it too. Is it like the, you know, like trying to be non-political or any of that kind of stuff? God, the news is just awful.
It's awful.
It is awful.
Did you hear Kornheiser when he had I forget his name, the comedian? And he was talking about trying to do non-political.
Yeah,
he doesn't like to write political humor. It's not his thing. Right. But I thought that was kind of interesting, the idea that it's so political today.
Yeah.
You have to at least address it.
Yeah.
You know, which I guess makes sense.
Well, and it's just I mean, a lot of stories are almost, I mean, everything becomes political, but you know, like the back and forth last week of, you know, the bombing in Manchester, and then those poor people in Portland who were murdered.
Right.
And I don't know. It's just, what an awful.
Well, and then you get this weird stuff like what's happening with Bevin and the house and all that stuff. It's just strange, right? It's like.
It's strange. Yeah. And, yeah. I mean, that. I can't even, I mean, I'm such a Freddy cat. I can't imagine what I'd feel like if I still worked for newspapers right now, where like in Kentucky over the weekend, there was a bomb threat.
Right. And then a shooting at the.
Kentucky, and then the Herald Leader got shot up. And I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe those things will turn out to not be at all kind of like politically oriented, but it's just, it sure feels like it. I mean, I don't know.
Well, one of the reasons why the chancellor of North Carolina quit being the chancellor of North Carolina was because after he fired Butch Davis, the football coach, you know, he and his family received death threats.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, that's kind of it. I'm done.
Yeah.
And, you know, you think about, people get that hyped up over sports and,
yes,
you know, the way things are right now in politics in the country, it's not surprising, I guess, that we're getting to the point where there's so much anger and frustration. So.
Well, and those people, and I don't think, I mean, I'm not saying that, I you know, obviously no one is saying that every journalist is perfect, and no one is saying that there hasn't been, you know, that there aren't vendettas and in coverage. Nobody's saying any of that stuff. But here's the deal. Those people are totally vulnerable. They are totally vulnerable. They have no protection whatsoever.
Sure.
You know? Zero. Zero protection. Not at their workplace, not to and from their workplace, not at their homes.
Everybody knows who they are. Too.
Everybody knows who they are. They make no money. Their kids are totally exposed. And the job is absolutely necessary. You know? And it's just, I mean, I was too much, that job, it was too much for me. I mean, you know, there was no high-minded, like, when I got out, it wasn't for any kind of high-minded reasons. It was because it was too stressful. I didn't like the deadlines. Right. You know, it was just too stressful. I just didn't want to do it. I didn't like it. But the, I don't know. And now to, like, compound this on that, where, like, it's sort of like, you know, now that the media is our enemies and, ugh.
Yeah, no. I know what you mean.
I mean, that was, ugh.
All right, let's get off onto a different topic. So
all right,
have you dropped the A's for the year?
Oh, for this season?
Yeah.
For this baseball season?
You said by June. You usually try to make a decision by the end of May as to whether or not you're going to follow or not follow.
I've pretty much dropped them. Yeah.
Well, the question is the AL West just done? I mean, Houston already has an 11-game lead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, of course it's not done. But, I mean, the A's had the – no, I know it's not done because the A's had that lead a couple of years ago. And, just slipping in as the wild card and then getting eliminated.
That's a good point.
Yeah. No, they're not done. I mean, it's not over. But as far as the A's go – I mean, you know, honestly – if the A's were to hit a hot streak and get within four or five games of the lead, then I'll start paying attention. But, you know, baseball's too hard to follow if your team is, you know, I guess I'm just not a big enough fan to follow it, you know, blow by blow if the team's not in contention.
Yeah, it's...
Are you following it at all?
No.
Are you following any baseball?
No, just loosely. I mean, it's an odd season to me in the sense that I didn't expect the Yankees to be... that good. I didn't think the Yankees were going to be any good. So
yeah,
that's a bit of a surprise to me.
Although I wouldn't even know that except for Kornheiser show, you know.
Oh, the Yankees.
I mean, I haven't even looked. I don't even look at the standings. You know, I just only what they mention about baseball on that show.
I know what you mean. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Then you get all the Nats news, but yeah.
Right. Yeah, I do kind of know what's going on with the Nats.
Well, and then on top of that, Wilbon's on every week, so he talks about the Cubs. So, but then the problem is the show stops soon. So,
yeah, and how long will it be on?
Until Labor Day.
Until Labor Day.
So they take like 2 months off. So,
yeah,
you miss the whole baseball season essentially.
Right.
But no, I'm kind of like you. I peek in every so often to see what the A's are up to, but a few years ago I actually started listening to a baseball podcast.
That's a good idea. Maybe I'll do that.
It was a good one. I forget the guy's name that did it, but it was on the old Grantland system, so I don't know what happened to that guy. But he would generally just have beat writers on.
Yeah.
And he would try to get a variety of beat writers from around the country to talk about the particular team they were following. So it was helpful because you learned a lot about, you know, what was going on across the league. And that year was the year that the Royals first made the World Series.
Okay. Yeah.
And that was fun because they had the Royals beat writer on like in May, like early May.
Oh, wow. So you got that. Well, that was the A's and, big season.
Yeah. And he was talking about how, yeah, it was kind of looking like that was it for the Royals, like that these guys were probably not going to stay together and the team was probably going to be flushed and they'd start over again. And, of course, then they rallied up. And so, yeah, it was fun following that season. And that was a good way to follow it, you know. But after Grantland went away, I kind of lost interest, but –
No, I'm not. The 71 baseball season is very real to me, like, but this season is not at all. So.
What about the NBA? Are you excited about the finals? Or could, you know, do you think you'll watch?
No, I won't watch it at all. I mean, there's no way I'll watch it. Will you watch it?
I'll watch highlights.
Yeah.
That's about it. I have to say I'm not a LeBron James fan. I never have been. So
yeah,
he doesn't interest me at all. So
yeah, I have no problem with any of them. In fact, I suspect that that if I was, you know, 14, I think that this, I think the NBA might be my favorite sport right now if I was 14 years old, because there are some really good players, and they're different teams.
Sure.
The teams all play the same way, and that, you know, they don't. They don't all play the same way. There's some real, you know, interesting teams, and they seem, you know, really professional and stuff like that.
But I think the hardest part, you know, when we were growing up, you know, I didn't pay that close of attention to the NBA, just kind of watched it from afar.
Yeah.
And so when Boston and the Lakers were in the finals, watched that, or Detroit.
Yeah.
So just kind of focus on who's the best teams right now. Mm-hmm. Sort of thing. And when I lived in Philadelphia and started really following the 76ers, the thing I realized was that, you know, if your team's not any good, and generally speaking in the NBA, you know, if your team has a chance.
Oh, like real early. Yeah.
You know, yeah, maybe they'll make the playoffs, but you don't think they'll do anything once they get in there. It's hard to stay interested.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I want Golden State. I like Golden State for whatever reason. I just think they're interesting. But
yeah,
I'd like to see Durant win.
I probably am more for Golden State than I am for Cleveland, but yeah. I mean, I'm not, you know, going crazy about either one of them.
I just like to see Durant win, so we don't have to hear all this talk about Durant. But
yeah, me too. Yeah, I'll be for. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that, but yeah, I'll be for Golden State. I like Curry. I mean, I don't have any problem with any of them.
Now, if New Orleans next year could be good, if they could be competitive and it looked like they were actually going to make the playoffs,
yeah, that'd be fun.
Then I would actually follow them, I think.
Yeah. Well, I got into, I mean, I was totally into it as long as the Wizards were in it, and I enjoyed their, they had a really good season. You know, they, and I enjoyed that whole Boston series. I mean, I pretty much watched all those games.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah, and I watched them a little bit against Atlanta, too. And, you know, had paid attention to them in the second half of the season. But, you know, once they got out, just because they're my team, then I lost interest. But no, I think that if I was kind of open, you know, to if I was more open, I think that I would really get into the NBA. Now, the NBA to me is the most like of the big team sports. It is the best in terms of like you have to really work your way to the top. I mean, you have to fight through.
Right.
You know, it's there are never any flukes.
Well, it's the classic thing with the Pistons.
Yeah.
Right. They had to fight their way through, and then Jordan had to fight through the Pistons, and then I mean. It's kind of traditionally that's the way it's been, and
better. I mean, players have to improve, you know, like late, you know, deep into their careers, you know, like 6 years in, you know, 6 years into his career, Michael Jordan was absolutely a better player than what he was his first year.
Oh,
he
sure.
just was,
yeah, yeah.
You know, whereas like even in the NFL,
running backs. Like the guy for Dallas, who's the running back for Dallas, he's never going to be that good again, probably.
Probably not.
You know?
Probably not. It's just not, for whatever reason, yeah, exactly. It just becomes attrition, you know, like how long can you hang on to your skills before you get dinged up too long?
Right.
I mean, I guess the quarterbacks do get better, and that's what makes that position so interesting, you know? Tom Brady's a better player now than what he was 15 years ago. There's no question about that either. But although the injuries really weigh, you know?
Sure.
But in the NBA, you know, you do have to, you know, Michael Jordan learns how to play defense while he's in the NBA, you know, and LeBron James has become a fantastic defender, you know.
Well, and I'm never sure quite what happens to some players. Like, I remember, so one of the teams that really intrigued me was the Dallas team with Jamal Mashburn.
Yeah, you love
so that team. They have Jamal Mashburn, Jimmy Jackson, Jason Kidd, and of course my favorite, Popeye Jones.
Sure.
And they were young, I mean, very young team. Mm-hmm. And I never understood why they couldn't do anything. Like, I don't understand what happened. Why?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird to me. It just didn't make any sense. It's like, gosh, they should develop and become so good. And
yeah,
but they didn't. And Mashburn really never became anything other than what he was, you know, just like a scoring forward. And
right,
you know, I don't even think he played that long. And well, I think he played like 10 years, but you know, in some ways, that's not for a guy as talented as he was. It doesn't seem that long.
I mean, I think that some guys just have, you know, they have some ceilings to, you know, in skills areas, and they have some ceilings, and they're not going to get better than what they are. And if you, you know, I can, my coaching experience based on Front Page Sports, you know, you don't know what that ceiling is until you actually confront it and send them through a training camp, and their number doesn't get any bigger.
Sure.
You know, that's what you find out. So in that area. So, you know, I think that goes on. And the other thing too, is that I think the people that really, you know, I think the salary cap is huge. And my guess is if you want to be a really giant NBA fan, you kind of got to dive into that and know what your salary cap situation is. And so like, that's one thing I wonder if what's going to go on with the Wizards now. Like, okay, it seems like they're on their way up. But is their salary situation such that they
can't do anything?
Yeah, you genuinely can't add a critical piece, and this is how good they can get with like these three key players,
right?
You know, and those three key players are going to help them win enough to where they're not going to get a top draft choice, and because of their salary cap, then they can't add them in free agency.
You know, it's funny you say it, because I know in the NFL there are guys like Bill Barnwell who sort of, that's where they made their bones writing.
Yeah.
Was writing about cap situations and how it's going to affect this team and what their options are. And I assume there are people doing that for the NBA, although you hear it more I don't hear it discussed in the same way. I guess because in the NBA, the moves you're making are maybe one or two players. It's not like, they got to rebuild their whole defensive secondary and they have no money. But it's interesting. I don't know. It's like Boston getting this number one pick.
You know,
I mean, here's a team that was the number one team in the East, and now they're sitting with the number one pick in the lottery.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I don't know.
Yeah. Though it's a year where there's not apparently a clear number one guy, but.
Well, everybody seems to think that Fultz or Ball are the two best players, but, I don't know.
This is one of the things they talk about with the Ravens, is that the Baltimore Ravens is that they really messed themselves up with the contract that Flacco signed.
Right.
That they got with Flacco, you know, that he had, that really ties him up in terms of being able to.
Well, so the thing, the argument you'll hear about the Seahawks is that the key to those Seahawks team that won the Super Bowl was the level of depth that they had.
Yeah.
That they had really good depth all the way across the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start signing big contracts, the first thing that goes is the depth, because you just can't keep it. You know, you can't afford that many guys once they start getting paid. Which of course means that how you draft and how you do in picking up free agents and how you do it sort of bringing people along is so critical, right? I mean,
well, and that's the though he's a cheater, that is also the genius of Belichick, is that there are cuts that he makes that surprises everyone, because you know, you think, God, this guy is still really great, you know, and they just let him go. But he, you know, he's very clear-headed about, you know, he does the class, you know, what they always say, which is you want to let go a guy a year too early, then let him go a year too late. And that really hoses with your salary set up and all that kind of stuff.
It does lead to the big question of will he keep Tom Brady or will he decide to trade Tom Brady at some point? The Dolphins will probably get Brady right at, you know, right as his arm's falling off.
It is interesting that it is, I think, telling that he didn't cut bait on Garoppolo, you know?
No, I agree.
Such a demand, you know, there was such interest in Garoppolo, and the fact that he actually did follow through and not trade him does indicate to me that maybe he is thinking about that, you know, well, we'll see, you know, and he's going to cut loose Brady very quickly in the same way that like Bill Walsh got rid of Joe Montana, you know?
Yeah, you hear different arguments about the Garoppolo thing. I mean, one is that unless he's just holding out and trying to get the highest price he can get for him. But, you know, at the end of the season, he's got to make a big decision about Garoppolo.
Yeah.
Right? So, and again, this all goes back to the salary cap thing. I mean, you can't pay Garoppolo probably what he would get in the open market and keep up his, right.
Yeah, so. Have a back starting quarterback salary. Yeah. So.
I don't know. Okay. Yeah, that stuff's really weird. That's one of the things that I don't know if it takes away from the game, but it certainly makes it, like you said, more complicated in some ways to follow.
Yeah.
It's like the Dolphins. I mean, I look at the Dolphins and I always think, oh, they should be so close. And then I'll hear these guys talk about, well, they have no cap room.
Yeah.
They can't do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because of these dead contracts they've got, guys that never worked out. Yeah. And, the Dolphins. There you go. It's a podcast killer. Just talking about the Dolphins.
All right, I do want to say one thing about 71 baseball season.
Yeah.
Real fast. Just this, like the last couple days in the 71 season, this huge trade. I mean, it doesn't look like a huge trade at the time, but the Giants just traded George Foster to the Reds.
Oh, cool.
George Foster was a backup outfielder. He played like all three positions behind this outfield that San Francisco has. It's like really good. And he's been up for, I think this is his third season in the majors. But anyway, they just traded him to Cincinnati for a prospect shortstop named Frank Duffy and then a prospect pitcher. And anyway, Foster's going to end up we talked last week about how the Reds had lost their starting center fielder.
Right.
Foster's actually going to end up becoming the starting center fielder in Cincinnati for the rest of the year. And my guess is that this trade really has a lot of impact on the next like several seasons in the National League West because that Giants outfield that seems so strong, well, Willie Mays is going to get old, and Bonds is not going to turn into Mickey Mantle, and then they got the other guy Ken Henderson who kind of becomes kind of a journeyman player, and they let George Foster go. And the guys that they pick up do nothing for them, basically. And then Foster, of course, becomes a huge star in Cincinnati. So I think this is like, you know, where it feels like right now that the Giants actually could be like the stud team for the next 5 years in the National League West. This trade is actually going to be quite huge here in terms of reshuffling that a little bit. So
when Tolan comes back in 72, he comes back to center field. Yeah. I was trying to remember who plays center.
He'll take that job again, but then at some point, and I don't know when, at some point the Reds are going to trade with Cincinnati for Cesar Geronimo, who was
he's there in 72.
Okay, so he gets there pretty soon. He either gets there this season or in the off season, but he's still with Houston right now.
He might have come there during the season because he only played 120 games for them in 72. Gosh, he's young.
Yeah.
Foster's only 23 in 72.
Yeah. So it's an interesting thing, and you see, by getting Geronimo and Foster, now Pete Rose moves into the infield. Tony Perez is able to move over to first.
Right.
They get longer. You know, the whole thing. I mean, this they go to a much younger outfit. Anyway, they become a much younger team quite quickly. So I thought that was a fairly huge transaction.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
For baseball. Okay. I gotta go. I'll get back to work on it.
I'll talk to you later.
Okay. See you.
Bye. Bye.